And hello, and welcome back to the Comic Books Matter podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and with me today is two amazing creators, both of the writers of the new graphic novel from Aftershock, Kill a Man. It's Steve Orlando and Philip Kennedy Johnson. Hey, guys.
What's up, Jesse?
I know last time we talked, Philip, about comic books, I had a little brief thing where I talked about how sometimes I read a comic book and it's like, oh, this is what I want to write. This is what inspires me. This is the thing I want to create. And I literally had that moment while reading Kill a Man at work. Like, I was reading that and I was like, man, if I would give anything right now to just quit and write.
Dude, thank you so much. That's like the highest praise. I appreciate that very much.
And like everything about that book comes together so well. And I'm just going to praise you guys for a little bit, if you don't mind. Everything about that book comes together, the colors, the pencils, the emotional scenes, the action. I even, like, on my Twitter thread, I was like, even the lettering just works perfectly in that I felt like I was just reading a movie in a lot of ways. And when I got to that final fight, I'm like, this is how I felt when I was like 6 or 7, my dad showed me Rocky the first time and he's like fighting for his life in that moment. And I'm like, this is it. This is everything. And it's such a different story that it works so well.
Man, I don't know what to say to that. I really appreciate you, those kind words. It's a story that meant a lot to us for sure. And I mean, I also selfishly feel like it's a very cinematic kind of thing. And I love to hear that you had that reaction and that it meant so much to you too, man. So thanks so much.
Philip is the gentleman. So he said it better than me. But it does, you know, the short version is I'm really happy that that happened for you and for everyone reading it. Look, we put 2 to 3 years of our life into it. So like it's now that it's out there, everyone who it connects with is really validating because grammatical pun aside, like Philip and I really did have to fight for this book, to get out there, to find the right publisher, to find someone who would believe in it because sports comics in America are not generally looked at as doable.
Yeah.
And to find folks that would support the content and bring it to life accurately. So we were in the ring for a long time, and I know I talk this way all the time. It just sounds like I'm making fight puns, but it's not on purpose. So to have it out there and have people get it, very, very exciting. We really appreciate you.
And it feels like this book, because I was talking to my shop when I picked it up, because I had to pick up a bunch of stuff, so we were talking for a bit. And when they got to Kill a Man, when they went to go scan it, he's like, oh man, I'm excited. I got my own copy of this. This is going to be great. Like, I'm excited to read this. And we were talking about like the premise and stuff. And it feels like you're saying like how in the Western market, sports comics aren't really a thing right now. I feel like this could easily become the breakout to blow those doors open, to be like a challenging to the capes. Because I think Fence is really good. And I think that might be the only other sports comic I've ever read is Fence. But this one is challenging and it's deep and it's so much fun. Again, with the action, it's just so much fun to see those pages of him just beating the crap out of everybody.
Yeah, MMA is a really, I feel like it plays to comics very well, and it's just not done enough. I don't know if it's because I feel like there's not a, I don't know a ton of comics people who also love MMA, like deeply love it. I mean, Steve was one of the first comics people I had like a very meaningful conversation about MMA with. Let's see, Brett Schenker actually of Graphic Policy is a big MMA guy, but there's not a whole lot really that I know of. I I've not read Fence and I don't know why. That looked really good and I have not gotten around to reading it, but I do remember when that came out and it seemed like a very bold move and a big, yeah, it just seemed like a really great premise. I remember when, years ago, Blair Butler and Kevin Mellon did a book called Heart that was MMA. That was really great, black and white book, I believe. That was years ago when I think it was around the same time. I think Blair Butler still had her comic show online at the time.
Oh, that is true. It was back when you could do a black and white book at Image.
Yeah. Yeah, and
it was. Now, it even was Walking Dead's being republished in color, so there is that. Like, I feel like that's kind of the death nail for black and white books at Image.
I mean, I think everything is cyclical, you know. I love black and white when it fits, but it can't just be, it's got to be for a reason. I love four color. I mean, like the single color that you see a lot in young adult and middle grade work, I really like. It just has to fit, you know. I think the reason it worked in Walking Dead is because it makes you feel like you're watching some horror VHS, you know, background or something. But if we did this book in black and white, people would be thinking, they'd be thinking longer about why it was in black and white than what was going on in the story, you know, and that gets always, it just has to fit. Like, I joke that you can't do them anymore, but you know what, the right person in the right pitch, you definitely could. There's nothing you can't do as long as it's for a reason and it makes sense.
Talking about colors too, though, Kill a Man is like very limited colors in a lot of scenes. And usually it's like saturated in one particular color. Like the fight scenes are very saturated in reds. And I noticed like the somber emotional scenes are very saturated in purples. And I think that alone is so good to the narrative. Like I feel like everything that, the artist's name is blanking on me. If you guys don't want to run, it'd be
Alec. Yeah.
Like everything he's done and everything the letterer has done, it feels like is there to just purposely push your guys' narrative so far to the front of everybody's head and to like, to kind of just slap people in the face saying, look at this story that we're telling you. And it matters. It matters more than anything right now.
Yeah, we didn't give Al a whole lot of direction as far as color, and he made those choices. Like there are places where it's almost like flats, and he just really pushed the palette really far one direction. I really like how it turned out in that way. As far as that or black and white or whatever, I feel like it's all about execution. You can get away with anything as long as it's just good enough, you know? Like it's, and like Steve said, like for a reason, like my first finished comic was a web comic that I did that was intentionally black and white. I mean, selfishly, I didn't want to have to pay a colorist because I was paying for every page that the artist was doing, but I didn't want it to be just because I couldn't afford a colorist. I wanted it to be a creative decision. So I ended up doing this like a period horror piece. The whole thing was set on a U-boat in World War II, and like it just, with the artist's take on ink spatter and lack of color, has worked really well. I think it works well for Walking Dead as well. I've seen other books that works well. I like Grendel in black, white, and red.
Oh yeah, I was thinking about black, white, and red for the new Wolverine series that's out, that anthology series. White
Blood, or whatever they called it.
Yeah, I think it's black and white and blood.
And like black, white, and blood, because DC put out Harley black, white, and red, and they were definitely not the thing we want to get in on, but also it is.
Yeah, but for like Wolverine, like it felt like in some ways a little tacky because it's just like the blood is the only part that's red ever in that comic. And I always think about the black and white anthologies for Batman, where it just gave the artist so much more room and space. It felt like to just go wild with the inks and the line work when they don't have to worry about coloring kind of like muting a lot of their art. And then, but then I think about the Grendel omnibus of just it being black, white, and red, and like how the red was so purposeful in that narrative. Versus the Wolverine book where it's just the blood. The stories are still pretty fun, but the color doesn't add much.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about, I mean, nobody knows what they want until they have it. In some cases, I mean, no one was talking about the idea. This is not specifically about color, but like just the thing that always pops in my head is like when I first heard about Game of Thrones coming to HBO, I was like, fucking fantasy. Like what a weird idea.
Yeah.
And they just sold it so hard and it became this phenomenon, you know, and now all of a sudden everyone's doing fantasy. Like it's just, nobody wanted fantasy until everyone wanted it.
Yeah.
The sex helped. I mean, the sex position was clearly how they got people in the door with Game of Thrones, but that just means that I have to start doing that in my own books more.
Yeah. All of a sudden.
We tried, Philip, but we'll just have to do more next time. Less fighting, more fucking. Story of my future.
The kind of sidetrack, because I want to talk about Kilvan and your guys' collaboration since I have you both on, but I've read through a bunch of, I had three weeks worth of backlog of comics because I just the way my schedule was. So I binged through a lot of comics this week, and I read Commanders in Crisis 2, and I read Last God 10. So I was like, I'm going to talk to both of them, so I want to talk about these books too while I'm here. Steve, Commanders in Crisis is such a love letter to everything, but also kind of spits in the face and everything at the same time, and like in a good way. Like it's like, here's everything that I grew up on and loved, but also this is now my version of that, and it's kind of better than everything else right now in that way.
Well, it's what I love to hear. It's not better than Last God, though. Hold your tongue. but
I'll allow it.
Although, interestingly, I think what Philip is doing in Last God is subverting a lot of genre tropes in the way I'm trying Matters in Crisis. So it's an interesting through line because Last God is largely about how all these heroes, I mean, the thesis is about how, I mean, he's going to get in the way if I'm saying the wrong thing, but it's largely about, you know, what if all these heroes that you trump up and legends that you follow were all a lie?
Yeah.
What's a bigger subversion of fantasy, which is almost always grounded in lore versus character, than that? So I actually think Philip is doing similar stuff with Last God. But I appreciate it. You know, that's what we're trying to do. I want to, you know, for better or worse, I was talking to Tynan recently, and he said that my superhero work tends to be like part Grant Morrison and part Gardner Fox. And I think that's true. Like, I like absurd superheroes. I like absurd ideas. And I like them to be strange and thought-provoking. And so, yeah, like when I go out and start the superhero universe, you know, some future spin-offs might be more sort of one thing or the other, but this big sprawling introduction, we want to show you what the world can be. And we want to, yeah, as you said, like we're only going to further pick apart sort of tropes of event comics and superhero comics and sort of question why they are the way they are, you know, and you'll see that. I put issue 4 basically to print this week, and there's a lot of sort of analysis of why we view the multiverse, why the multiverse almost always ends up being presented the way it does, like at the big two and in a lot of other books, not just the big two, everywhere. So we talk about that, and I mean, it's important to me, and it's important to me because I think in the same way Philip thinks about everything that goes into Last God, I think sometimes on superheroes, people get an autopilot, and you guys as readers deserve stuff that makes you think and makes you wonder. You should never be on cruise control, first of all, with anything, because working in comics is a privilege, but something like superheroes, like it's easy to just, you know, stick it and drive. And I don't know why I'm doing all these driving metaphors right now, but it's easy to just deliver the candy fruit that people want, and that's fine, but that's fleeting. And so people deserve more narrative calories. And you're talking to guys who count their calories. So, you know.
I think that's extremely important in like comic books, because I'm one, like they're not cheap, but two, it's like, I don't care if you fail at what you're trying to do, but if you're trying something different, that's what's so much like important to me. Like, some of my favorite books are just some of the weird books. Like, I love the mini arc in Batman with Tom King, The Nightmare. Just like everybody else is like, that didn't make any sense. It's so crazy. I'm like, yeah, but it's crazy. It's something new. Like,
I mean, my favorite Star Trek film is 5, which is a complete fucking failure, but at least they tried to do something bold. Like, you know, the Enterprise goes out into space to find God. I'm like, I'm there. And of course it ended up being real bad.
Yeah.
And Shatner has a fucking Go Climb a Rock t-shirt and a girdle. But I appreciate the boldness of the idea, even if it is in that case a catastrophe.
Yeah, and I think one of your comics that completely encapsulates Grant Morrison and Gardner Fox's Electric Warriors, because when I was reading that, I was like, this is really weird, but also it feels like home in a lot of ways. Like the way it reads, like this feels like old comic books, but it was so out there and different than anything else that was on the DC line at that moment.
I appreciate it. I liked Electric Warriors was actually the first book I gave to my boyfriend to read, who is not a comics fan. I mean, he just hadn't read them. And interestingly enough, he was right into it and followed everything. And the big mandate at DC internally was to make something that both was like steeped in DC lore, but also completely accessible.
Yeah.
We tried to have a lot of Easter eggs, but not make it so you're tripping over them. But I didn't want to talk over PKJ. Is my assessment of Last God accurate? Like, I would say that the goals of the series are actually pretty similar from a thematic sense when it comes to genre and sort of analyzing the tropes and subverting them. Or am I just talking on my ass? Begin speaking.
Oh, you're right. It's, I mean, if we're talking about the goal of the whole series, the theme of the whole thing is the lies we tell our children, basically. Like, we want our kids to all think that we're awesome, and not necessarily literally children, but like just the cycle of trying to do your best by your kids and inevitably failing in some way, like just failing to live up to the image you portray. And then the kids grow up and it's like, I'm going to do better and be better and be more. And, they've in some ways are doomed to fail, but it's, you know, in probably different ways, like everyone tries to be more than they're given, you know, like that was kind of the theme of the whole thing. But as far as the execution, yeah, it was meant to be, I was trying to like you're obviously like, I love your superhero work. I love how you have such a great grasp on what superhero comics are. And Commanders in Crisis is, well, like Jesse said, like a love letter to it, but also like a kind of just turn it inside out and doing your own thing with it.
It's a love letter and a middle finger, which coming from Central New York, I feel like that's just how we say hello.
Yeah.
So you've been up there, Philip, you know.
I have. Well, in Last God, it's sort of the same thing in that it's definitely a love letter to Tolkien and even to George R. R. Martin. And I mean, the one book that I probably relied on the most in creating Last God is the Silmarillion, something that is not as widely beloved as his other work. I mean, it was never really put out as a book in his lifetime. It was basically just his notes, you know, that then were kind of shined up and repurposed as a book.
And yet it's my favorite because it's like reading a weird fanfic Bible.
Exactly. It's like, it's like the Old Testament of this world.
Mm-hmm. Although to be fair, the New Testament is already kind of fanfic of the Old Testament. So let me just say something subversive right now.
No, you're good. But yeah, it was like, it's, to me, that the Silmarillion was kind of like this, I mean, just a masterclass in world building, you know, and I wanted this to be like the best fantasy is always, it's the worlds that are so deep and they feel so old and real that you could just dive, just deep dive and never hit bottom, you know? And that's what I did with Last God. Like I just try to take every lesson I could from them as far as world building, but then also fill in the gaps that I don't think ever really got filled in. Like, well, in Tolkien's world, there was never really any exploration of religion.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, in the Silmarillion, you get into the actual, like what the gods actually are and were, and like the truth of it, but you never see who the Numenoreans worship themselves or who the hobbits worship or who the elves, like, do they all have the same, like everyone's kind of knows the truth or they don't, but they don't really, there's not these, no kind of religious clashes like we have in our earth, you know? And yeah. I wanted to see some of that. I wanted to see not just true religions, but also false ones. And I wanted to see, you know, racial tensions between the races and between the different tribes of a race too, like between different factions of Elva, the Elven nations. And, you know, show some dwarven women, you know, show them, you know, what's every culture look like? What are the different languages look like? I just wanted to really do a deep dive on the all the world building, like our heroes have done in fantasy, but also show the dirty truth of the world in a way that the shiniest, you know, fantasy tropes don't. So yeah.
And what's cool is because last issue came out as issue 10 and there's like two left, right?
Yeah.
Two 12, left. 11 and 12. And so you're in like a whole different position now that Steve is in Commanders in Crisis, where everything that you've been building, those emotional payoffs are coming into like the end game. Like the issue 10 is a very tense and sad and rough issue to read because there's a lot of betrayal, there's a lot of deal making that you're finally seeing made, and it's like, oh, we're right there, we're finally close to the end there. And I was reading, it's like, oh man, my journey's almost done here, and I feel kind of rough. So how does it feel though, getting readers like feedback of this long journey and now you're almost at the end?
It's been amazing, man. I don't know, there's more payoffs and reveals all the way until the very last issue. Like I've read other books where the last issue is kind of just a big beam in the sky fight, and that's kind of the end. And that is not the case in this one, where you're still getting big, like, holy shit moments in the very last issue. And I can't wait for people to see those. 10 was when I really wanted people to see, because you finally see what happened. Like, you've been kind of alluding to the First Fellowship this whole time and what actually happened to the Black Stair. And now we actually see what really happened, finally. And, you know, at least in my mind, hopefully in the mind of readers, the crime actually was as bad as they hinted at. And then we see what happened to Hakon later. So getting these payoffs to finally be in the book that no one's known about but me this whole time has been really rewarding. It's been great to see readers respond to it and not feel let down or betrayed in some way. You know, like a lot of, when people get attached to a certain story, they develop their own theories and ideas, even if it's not fully fleshed out.
Ideas
of what, you know, what the truth must be or should be, which is why we see people be such whiny bitches about superhero stuff when something didn't go their way sometimes.
Yeah, we do.
But it's, you know, but that comes from a passion for these characters, and I love that, you know?
Yeah.
So, and this is only 12 issues instead of, like, you know, generations long like it is with Batman, but
until he comes back with the second to last god in 2022.
Yeah, one more god.
One more god is a better title, actually. You're totally right. That's a winner right there.
The thing about Last God is I could easily see you coming back and making it like an anthology series where like this is the last god in another area or in another fantasy world or something else.
The Last God is just book one of the Fellowspire Chronicles. So if we were to do more, I'm going to say when we do more. I'm pretty sure there's going to be more books. It's been received very well. And Ricardo is into it. I'm into it. We're both busy for the immediate future, but soon I would love to come back to this and do more. The title will be something very different. And that's deliberate. Like I want, if we do another, when we do another thing, it'll be a very different kind of arc. It will not rely on the last god to read it. So when people read the next one, they can just jump in, read it. Like I want them to be able to see, to notice book two of the Fellowspire Chronicles after they've already read it. Like, oh shit, this ties into that thing that I read before or that I never did read, and not feel like they jumped into the second season of a TV show and they're lost. You know, like I want them to be able to pick up book two and appreciate it for what it is and have book one make book two better, but not make it necessary, you know?
Yeah. And now going back to Kill a Man, because you guys in your own right are just powerhouse writers. How coming together, how did you guys manage to kind of keep each other in check with some of the script and like where each one of you wanted to play around in like the aspects of it?
I mean, I think it worked very well. I mean, Phil and I are both pretty blunt and honest. He's just nicer about it because he's in the military.
Yeah, I'm in the military, is super fucking nice, dude.
Yeah, you even sound like a gentleman saying that, whereas I just don't even know how. It's like you put a bow on saying fucking in a way that is really special. But
thanks.
But the joking aside, like the things that, I mean, Philip and I do know each other pretty well. And nothing was off the table when it comes to communication on the book. And I think that benefits. And the practical way that it played out is that, you know, I would lead on the emotional scenes and Phil would lead on the combat sports scenes. And then we would exchange the scripts and, you know, we would say like, I know about mixed martial arts to an extent, but not to the extent that Philip does. And yeah. I would sort of say like, I would go through and I would sort of say the things that I thought that were working. And then there were passages that I thought to like the mainstream audience, or especially my parts of my audience, specifically the queer audience, might go so far into minutia that it became off-putting. Mm-hmm. And we would dial those back. And likewise, Philip had full rein to say the same when it came to the queer storylines. You know, we know that straight readers aren't necessarily always super familiar with what we do. It's not reading books. And so like there was free rein for Philip to say likewise, like this is maybe so raw or so whatever that people aren't going to consider it's going to drive them away. You know, they're going to step out the door instead of going further. And we could pick those parts, we could pick those scenes apart to find the core and then represent them in ways that were widely palatable. And the same goes for the combat sports scenes. Like I would never say this has to go, but I would say why are we doing this? And is there a way we can get it across that'll be understandable to everyone as opposed to the granular crowd? And I would say, Philip, it's fair to say the same should happen in reverse.
Totally. I really like the process that we use. Steve said, Steve took the lead on the, Steve had a very personal stake in this story. He had some mm-hmm. things he really wanted to say and to express with Killaman. And he typically led on a lot of the relationship scenes. And unless that scene was about like mechanics of fighting or whatever.
Yeah.
And I would lead on the mechanics of fighting kind of conversations or the inside baseball stuff between the head of the EFC and his lackeys. And then the fight scenes, I would lead on those. So it's pretty, you know, pretty even page count probably as far as what we did. But then we would take, everyone would take everyone else's shit and go over it again, kind of just sort of homogenize the language. So it's all written by the same person, you know?
Yeah.
Like some of it is in the phrasing of the dialogue, but
I'm laughing because that was usually more me. Like Philip would have like maybe some too technical terms about fighting, and I would just have like some very brusque stuff about gay sex.
Yeah, okay.
There's one distinct scene I can think of where I have the graphic novel like behind me, and I wish I could just go grab it and find it. But there's a scene where the main character is yelling at someone. I don't remember who. He's talking about how they're upset that he's getting into Bussy, and I'm like, that was Steve. That's all Steve. None of that's Phil. He tells
Kane that his father would have been really happy that he was slain until he found out that it was Bussy. Yeah.
And I was like, I read that, I'm like, that's the most Steve part of this whole book.
I mean, so yeah, true. that was, we glossed it. We shined that scene up a little bit too. Like it was before, I was like, it's too much, bro. Like this is, I was very mindful of this book series that I read once. At some point I was looking for just like fun genre prose fiction. And somebody had suggested the Laurel K. Hamilton stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
Can't remember the character's name, but it's about like it's a world in where like undead are granted civil rights in the U.S. So like you've got vampires and, you know, werewolves and fucking whatever was all flocking to the U.S. And there's this detective who's got some powers, and she's on a detective squad that just deals with like undead. I can't remember the name. They have like a
Percy something. Didn't this get adapted into a comic?
Yes, it did. This is before that. I was reading before that, and then I saw they got adapted by Marvel. It was cool, but it was told.
Mercy Sparks? Is it called Mercy Sparks?
No, I don't think so.
Well, allow me to consult the internet as to what that is, but go on.
Yeah, we'll look it up. But anyway, it was good. The books were very well written, and I liked them. The main character was a woman, and I wouldn't go as far as to say it was written for women, but occasionally there was some stuff where I couldn't really relate. And then eventually it gets in, like by book four or five, it gets getting into details about sex with dudes. And eventually I was like, I don't feel like this is for me anymore. I kind of felt myself getting became less fun to read at a certain point. It became so blatantly like not for me. And I just remembered that book series, and I was like, I want this to cross these genre lines where you're reaching out to the LGBTQ community. You're also reaching out to fighting community, the UFC fans and fighters, but not push anyone away. And there were moments in like just the raw first draft script where I felt a little bit pushed away, and I would tell Steve when that happened. And then Steve would do the same thing for me when, when the fighting was getting a little bit too technical. Like to me, it didn't seem like it was getting technical, but then Steve would say, I'm not into this. And there's this one scene where we were real, real busy when we were writing this. We're doing other stuff, and sometimes I would make change. Like Steve commented on my first draft of something, and I thinned out the fighting jargon. Mm-hmm. And then when we were going through that scene again, so then Steve made his edits, and I was going through them again after that for probably a couple weeks later. And apparently I put some of that stuff back in, and I don't remember taking it out. And Steve was like, man, you really want to talk about this fucking shoulder thing, don't you? And I was like, did I take that? Was that in there before? And I had no memory of that. But that was just kind of like a little wake up call, like, okay, yeah, keep it down. And I don't, again, you're just trying not to push. You're not trying to take anyone to school to the extent that they don't feel like the story is for them anymore. You know, like you can open their eyes to a thing without, you know, seeing their eyes glaze over when you get too into fighting mechanics or if it becomes clear that the book was strictly for gay people. Like I need it to be for the LGBTQ community, but also for others that are just getting we're trying to break down barriers, make everyone more open to everyone else. And so we were this really great reminder for each other on both sides of that. It was really awesome.
And luckily I am like the most stupid and Neanderthalic queer writer in comics. So like if there's anyone that's gonna write a queer book for everyone that's just like, I like fighting and sex, like it's definitely me. I don't write about feelings. Ask anyone. So, but I did really enjoy the collaboration. Someday we'll do something else again. The only issue is that now Philip is crushing so many things that you guys don't know about, and some you do know about. Let's talk about how he's going to be on Aliens.
That was a crazy announcement.
and I'm doing things, but not aliens. But we're gonna come back together at some point when the schedules align. You know, we're both only 25, so.
I'm definitely 25.
I don't know how you guys both ended up younger than me suddenly.
It's timey wimey.
Question. I've been in the Army 15 years. They, you know, don't ask questions.
Yeah, they find a way to reverse.
Don't ask. It was a thing.
Right. Exactly.
That I think though falls in the line why I think this book is so special and like easily one of probably the best graphic. I have a hard time saying it's the best graphic novel I read this year because I just read Blue and Green, and I feel like both of them in their own way like push the graphic novel genre, like original graphic novel genre, like in a new atmosphere for a lot of people.
Happy tying Blue and Green. Like yeah. I think Rahm and Anand did amazing. So
like it's two different aspects of like, it's two sides of the same coin, right? It's like the really straightforward is Kill a Man, and the really abstract, but like the artistry of everything in a lot of ways is Blue and Green, because you're like watching someone chase their muse is a monster and stuff like that. But Kill a Man is very straight. This, you killed my dad. I need you to train me because everybody's abandoned me. And I want to beat this guy into his next life because he destroyed my life. And it's like, both of those narratives have been told different ways 100 times, but they've never been told so beautifully in both of these books. And that's why you got, knowing that you guys wrote this together and you can barely tell that there's two writers on this book is so cool, because it feels like you guys just fused into one writer. Like the perfect, I was just reading Batman and Superman where the composite Batman and Superman is like, that's composite writers, Philip and Steve put together.
Nice. One side is significantly more fit than the other, and it's Philip's side. Can I tell you, actually, when we were doing the promo shoot for this, like, so Philip was out here for his day job, which for folks who don't know, he's also a very good musician and plays with the Army Field Band. And so they were touring up here, and I snagged him for a couple hours to do a promo shoot. And I was like, you know, you're going to be like a man, and I'll have someone put me in drag makeup and all fight stuff too. So we did. And at one point, my friend who was shooting it was like, just play fight a little bit. And I was like, okay, let's do this. I will tell you, it was like I teleported onto my ass. Like, I don't even know, like I've never been clowned. In the way that Philip took me apart just for a photo shoot. So there's no question what side the actual combat experience comes from in this book, I guess is what I'm saying. I've been punched in the face 3 times in my whole life, and Philip has maybe been punched in the face 3 times this month. I don't know, you'll have to answer that.
Well, COVID's changed things, but I'm sure my son has hit me in the face at least that many times while he's sparring.
It's like the, I don't know if you guys saw it with the first Creed movie, that last fight, I guess behind the scenes, he's like, I got to know how it feels to get punched once. And like, he hit him and it just dropped Michael B. Jordan, like right then.
I mean, we did see it. I did not know that, but that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And so it's kind of funny.
We didn't touch on the book, but it's funny to me how usually in non, you know, work sports, it's never like the body guy that actually like is on the top. Like it's always the like mundane looking person that just is like really tough. Like I think about like, you know, in UFC, Cain Velasquez he clowned Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
When he came into pro wrestling later after he'd retired, everybody was like, who's this idiot? He's got small arms and a weird barrel body. And like, nobody bought that he could beat Brock, even though he really did in real life, like made a fool of him. And it wasn't the guy with like pecs the size of my head and Phillip's head. It was just this dude with weird arms that could hit you really hard.
Yeah.
And that's fascinating to me. There's probably science behind it. I don't know what it is, but it's fascinating to me.
My UFC watching is very little. I only watch because I have a family member that is in UFC. And so I watch their fights, and so I watch the fights around their fights. And it's always fascinating to see how many different body dynamics there are in UFC and fights like that, because I grew up with boxing in a lot of ways because I watched a lot of the boxing movies and then I watched old fights, and it's very similar body types in those most of the time. Like either someone's really fit and buff or someone's pretty lean. But with UFC, it's just like crazy amount of body types because you just don't know what's underneath that. They're like underneath the hood of them is like, they're just some people are just mean machines like that.
Yeah,
yeah, I mean, look at DC. He's not ripped, you know, he's not fat. He's probably what, number two all time, number three all time? Philip can answer.
That dude's incredible. I'm not sure what he's ranked right now because they just put Khabib up there too. But he's certainly on that list, and he's, yeah, just a maniac fighter, unbelievably talented. He's, you know, just look at him walking down the street. I mean, you can see that he's stocky, but he's also kind of like a little doughy compared to some people you see in the cage. But dude, he's a machine, and he doesn't really gas either. Like, it's not like he's lacking for cardio. Sometimes you see people who are heavy enough that they, like, their cardio suffers. I've never felt that way about DC though. And there have been champions that have always, like, just carried around a little bit of, especially in the, like, a really high weight class. Because I mean, if you're in the mid to light weight classes, you're not going to be, like, all those guys are walking around at a much heavier weight than they actually weigh in at. Like, if they're, it goes, it's a big part of wrestling culture too, where you want to weigh in as light a weight class as you can, so that you're ideally the bigger guy in the ring.
Yeah,
you know, it's just something that's just part of that culture. So you're not, it doesn't make sense to see a lightweight, like somebody fighting at 155, who's carrying around a lot of goo. But at light heavyweight and heavyweight though, especially heavyweight, it's I mean, the heavier body will, all other things being equal, be the stronger body. And yeah, just pushing against someone else, trying to get someone up against the cage, or trying to get, like, if you're kind of scrambling for control, if there's a 15-pound difference in weight, man, you feel it. Like, it's really obvious who the stronger, like, when you're both pushing against each other, you can feel that mass difference. So there's no reason to really cut weight if you're, like, super, if you're fighting in heavyweight, where the range is so wide, there's not really any reason to lean out like you do for some of the lighter weight classes.
Yeah. So you're writing like two, and, like, by the way, I love hearing you just go through the MMA fight talk, because it's like what I hope I sound like when I talk about comics to my friends.
What was that? Sorry, Steve.
We went down the rabbit hole real hard there, but that's okay.
Yeah, sorry, I just realized. No. Like,
I did it.
This is why I need Steve on my co-writing books, like, to keep me from doing shit like that.
Well, I was listening and I'm like, I really hope this is what I sound like when I talk about comic books to my friends who don't care, because it's super engaging and I want to be engaging when I'm trying to share my passions. So, like, that's what I was hoping. But I want to talk about, you're writing two now. This is a weird segue, but you're writing two of the biggest aliens of all time. Suddenly, you're writing Aliens and you're writing Superman for Future State. And I'm crossing my fingers that you're part of After Future State Superman. We'll find out hopefully in a couple weeks who's doing that. But how does it feel to, like,
not me? Let me just get that out of the way.
But see, that's the thing, Steve. You should be writing Superman too. Like, it should be.
You'll see what I'm doing this month. Don't worry about it.
You want action and fill up on Superman, and then you guys can plan the whole universe. You guys can have the Bendis fire pit thing that he was doing with everybody for his run.
It would be Philip and I, like, grilling in his backyard because he has a house. I don't have, I live in Boston where we don't have a front yard and talk to our neighbors. So
I was wondering, like, Philip, how's it feel writing these two, like, behemoth lineage characters? Or, like, Alien's a franchise more than a character, but still, like, there's a lot of characters that you can play with in that.
Yeah, it's dream come true, man. I mean, Superman, I grew up reading, like, I grew up on DC Comics, especially. Learned to read off of them, and the Batman and Superman were always the big characters. I would go kind of on a streak where I was into one more than the other, but even as a little kid, I totally got what they were. Like, for Batman gave me this power fantasy of, like, yeah, I can, you know, I can do anything. I can be anything. If I just work hard enough, you know, I can stand shoulder to shoulder with gods, like the way Batman does. You know, he just through force of will makes himself this incredible thing. And Superman, in contrast, made me feel like he just inspired me, made me want to be more than I was, you know. Mm-hmm. Even as a kid, a big part of that was the Christopher Reeve movies, as much as, or even more than, the comics. Like, just the way he was personified by Christopher Reeve in those films, and hearing the John Williams music and seeing the credits soar overhead, and it was just this feeling of, like, yeah, like, I want to be awesome, you know. I want to be more than I am. I want to do great things and help people, and which is this aspirational thing. And Man, just to get to be a part of that is such an honor. Yeah. I know he's not always portrayed that way in film or in comics. There have been a bunch of different takes, and he always reflects the visions of the creative team and all that. But for me, it's kind of that somewhere between that Christopher Reeve ideal that I saw as this very small child and like the Grant Morrison All-Star run.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the truest versions of Superman, that and like the way he's been portrayed by Mark Waid over the years. And like, I have a very clear image of what and who Superman is.
I would say Phillips is very much we're on the same page, even though it's going to sound like I prepped you on that, but no, like I think Superman Birthright, the Waid and You series, and All-Star to me, along with What's So Funny About Truth, Justice, and the American Way, the Joe Kelly single, yeah. Like to me, that's him. At least when anytime I've worked with him, like because it's All-Star is a great book, but to me, it's all about the issue, the day in the life issue, when you realize how many things he's doing every fucking day that you don't even see in the book. I am a huge bitch, so like when I read Birthright. I mean, I think Mark's addition to the fact that he gets that message back to his parents before Krypton blows up, I mean, I become emotional reading it because, again, I'm a coward. We're on the same without prepping ourselves. Philip named all the things that I think are also good for Superman. So that worked out.
It did. Yeah, yeah, man, I wish I could talk more about what I had coming up, but for Future State, it's, I will say this. So the first issue of Future State is it's like my love letter to Superman 400, actually, which I have here. It's this amazing anthology that they printed back in, I think, the 80s, that had a bunch of short stories by all these different superstar people. Frank Miller had a story in there. There's also just these single image like pinups in there by Ditko and I see Steranko did this big thing in the back. Just look at this. Mobius, there's a Mobius page.
They had such a big anniversary book for him.
Ray Bradbury has a thing in here. It's amazing. This is Sienkiewicz. This is from years ago. And so the first issue is kind of a love letter to that. It's kind of our this is years after Superman has vanished, and it's kind of humanity's vision of what Superman is, and it kind of morphs into where they think he is now, and then we finally see where he actually is now, and then in the next issue we're going to see Superman's opinion of us, like Superman's take on humanity. It's a if I was going to get struck by lightning and turn to ash tomorrow, it's all going to be okay because I've got my Superman story out there, and it's how I feel about the character and how I feel about humanity. And it's like just big statements I wanted to make. So I'm very excited for people to read it.
I might be one of the biggest nerds, and this may be why, but your Superman and John Ridley's Batman are two of the most exciting things to come out in January. Out of everything. And it's just so much fun to be it's like Christmas is this month, but Christmas for me is literally January.
Orthodox Christmas is January 7th, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Excellent.
Everybody so, Philip is just celebrating my family's Christmas.
Christmas as it should be.
I think, Phil, tell us, so the cover of your Future State book, Superman is, in chains. It's very evocative.
He's going classic Wonder Woman erotic with it, I'm pretty sure.
Well, I would posit that, the world around Superman can be as dark as you want, but he himself never gets dark, and that's kind of the point. So, I'm now interviewing you. What can you tell us about the world that you're throwing him into? Because it seems like that concept will, by necessity, be an element of the future, at least in your book. But I'm just going off the cover and things that we've talked about. That I know.
Honestly, again, we haven't talked about this until now, but you nailed it, dude. It's no matter what kind of scenario he's in, basically we're going to see, what can I reveal here?
Anything that's on the cover, you are legally allowed to reveal. I've played this game for
the design The design was Mikhail Hanin's design, and it's clearly very evocative of kind of like, you know, Clark Kent, Warlord of Mars, kind of a take.
I got John Carter as soon as I saw it.
Yeah, that's for sure what we wanted. It's a very pulpy, bigger than, you know, larger than life, epic poetry kind of a thing. Which actually, now that I said that, my House of L issue, which is like a double sized thing coming out in February, that is like on its face an epic poem kind of thing. Like there's actual like iambic pentameter in it that like it's treats the whole thing like we're reading about the fall of Camelot and all that. So yeah, I want Superman to be just epic. Like if there's gonna be one word to sum up what I'm doing in Superman, it's just this epic quality.
And that's what I'm literally, as a fan, it's all I want is Superman being like just a human god in a lot of ways. Like he's a human at heart, but he's a god in his powers.
Yeah, that's what I want. So we're gonna see that. And as far as the cover, yeah, we were trying to evoke that Warlord of Mars kind of take. We're gonna see him in a context we've never seen him in before, as far as his power level and what he's being asked to do. Everyone on Earth imagines him in this various ways that we'll see as just fucking crushed by Mikhail and his artwork. It's unbelievable. And then when we see the actual truth of where he is, it should be this shocking thing. You know, we should be like shocked, like, whoa, like what the, like, this is not at all what any of us thought he would be doing now, or how, you know, where he'd be given his godlike stature.
Yeah.
So he's going to be in Atlantic City playing skee ball. Dogma.
Nailed it, dude, as always.
Superman, I know you better than I know myself. It always comes back to skee ball with PKJ.
It's true.
With Alien, I know there's not much announced, so I don't want to dive too deep, but as someone who's never engaged with the Alien franchise at all, just because part of me was a coward growing up, but the other part of me just hasn't had time as an adult. That's what I was to ask, is like, what should I watch before I start reading the book? Because I'm going to get the book. That's like inevitable, but I need to know what to prepare for.
You should watch the first two films, in my opinion.
All right.
And you should know that they are both masterpieces in their own right, but they're very, very different. The first film is kind of like a bottle episode where you've got this, you see, well, I don't want to give anything away. This is like this magical moment where you're about to get your fucking mind blown.
I'm just going to cut off Phil because he's going to say too much. The first is a near perfect space suspense thriller. The second is a near perfect space war movie.
Yeah.
I don't mean to step on toes, but you were on the verge of saying too much. So I'm going to
stop myself. I stopped myself.
I'm stepping on him, but that's fine.
Steve, I know like you say you have a bunch of stuff in the works. I know Commander's Crisis is happening right now. Is there anything about what you're working on that you could talk about other than Commander's Crisis?
I mean, I've got, so last month, Philip did the Tales from Dark Multiverse Hush issue.
Yeah.
And I actually have mine out, I believe is today Thursday? So I believe this coming Wednesday.
Okay.
I did the Tales from the Dark Multiverse Crisis and Infinite Earths issue, which was a dream come true for me, I guess, without spoiling. I mean, I've already said it on Twitter, so like it heavily features the Justice Society.
Yeah.
Because the conceit is, what if Earth 2 survived instead of Earth 1? So it basically picks up at the end of Crisis with a different outcome, where it's Earth 2 that survived. And we play out last days of the Justice Society, but now it's last days of the Justice League. And that goes very poorly. And we end up doing this big apocalyptic attack on Earth with the Justice Society. Well, first the All-Star Squadron, and then the Justice Society of Earth, sort of making its last stand. So for someone who, I mean, one of the first DC books I ever bought was Justice Society. We're talking like the Len Strazewski, Mike Parabek, early 90s stuff. I never thought I was going to get to work with them, just because as the timelines lined up, they were off the table when I was at DC, and then I was not at DC and they were back. So for me, like, just a dream come true to be able to do that, and to be doing like the original pre-Crisis, like the characters that are from the 30s. And then it was like the weird Earth 2 version of Aquaman, and hopefully a lot of crowd pleasers, you know, like, because I'm here for nothing if not the Golden Age deep cuts, like the Red Bee, the other Manhunter, Don Richards. Dan Richards, God knows why his name is Don and his nickname is Dan. But yeah, I'm very excited to show that to people. And as for what else, I'm wearing this fucking shirt. So keep an eye out. I mean, within the next couple of weeks, for what that is, something I'm very excited about. Character that is coming up on their 50th anniversary in the spring. So I can't really go into more than that, but it is okay. It's going to be my first published Marvel work because Darkhold was pandemicked. I'm coming across the street to celebrate a character I have always thought is great, that I think needs a spotlight, and we're repositioning him or her in a really fascinating way. It's really been a great experience, and also just like they're supporting it with a variant program, which you'll see again when solicits come out. So every day I wake up and like someone else has drawn a mashup with this character.
Yeah.
And I'm just super excited about it. You know, like I was in DC for 4 years, and now, I mean, like almost everyone is in this book because of the nature of it. And like, you know, Phil said he got everything in. If he gets struck by lightning tomorrow on Superman, this is what I've been like on this book in Marvel. Like, I hope to do more, and secretly I think I know I'm going to do more, but if I didn't, like, I made sure that every character I love, including, I will say, it's not a Captain America book, but Philip, someone who else loves Captain America, I made sure that he's in there. I have a feeling that our two favorite characters are probably the same, since my favorite Marvel character is Captain America, and my favorite DC character, well, my favorite DC character is Wonder Woman, but number two is Superman. So they're probably pretty similar between me and Phil, Ip. I got it. But so you'll find out about that soon, and God, you're going to find out about a lot. I've got 4 Aftershock books coming out next year.
Oh, wow. I've
got my book Starward and Heavy Metal is their first YA push. I just sent that to print this week. Very excited about it. The most sarcastic, maybe the funniest book I've done in a long time, because I never really get to write characters that talk like me, which is to say, cynically and vulgar. But that will happen in Starward. So there's a ton. There's so much. My book, The Pull, is coming out from TKO. And I'm not like sucking my own dick saying that. Like, it's just when you go freelance, you got to write a lot.
Yeah,
And I've been doing it, but it's also been really fulfilling. I've been 3 times as busy and a third as stressed, is what I tell people. So you're going to see a ton of stuff. And that's not even before we get into the projects I'm funding myself just for the art of it all. So it's going to be 2021 is going to be wild. And we're still building stuff right now. I've had calls this week for really exciting things that I will, you know, tell Philip when we're off the thing. And I will tell you when we're not recording as well, a couple,
but for the recording.
I will just say it's going to be a wild year.
It's so frustratingly and like frustrating in a good way when I hear you guys, like when Philip talks about Superman and you're talking about JSA, I'm like, I just want them on the ongoings, because I know that they would nail them perfectly for at least 50 issues. But
people are going to be, I mean, like it's a dark multiverse one shot. So I will say this is going to be real sad. There's more hope in it than some of the others. I think Philip thread the needle well in his. Some of them I think are a little bit like sadness porn.
I feel like this round of these are actually a lot more hopeful than the first round were, because Vita's War of the Gods was more hopeful than all the other ones too.
Well, I snuck a little bit in. It's still a cosmic tragedy. Don't worry. The billions die, actually. So, you know, not that hopeful, but a little bit. Like a small, like an angstrom, like a scotch, whatever a scotch is.
Yeah. Two last questions before we wrap it up, because I don't want to keep you guys too late. One, how are you guys relaxing right now during the pandemic? That's what I'm curious about. Because me, I finally have like buckled down and started watching TV shows and stuff again to kind of like stop stressing. So I'm just curious what you guys are doing.
I don't have an answer, because what's relaxation?
Yeah, you're working like crazy now.
No, the real answer is, and this sounds like bullshit, and this is why I'm answering before PKJ, because he's got better ideas, but I started doing a lot of like soccer mom exercises, which calm me down. So I now do yoga and Pilates in my office. Joking aside, I really enjoy them. I look like a fool taking Lamaze class without a uterus, but I really enjoy it, and it is de-stressing to me. It's been good, because otherwise I don't leave the house. Still go like to the base and shit, right? Like you are like leaving your domicile.
Yeah, I still go to work and stuff. I mean, not all the time. I don't go in every single day, but I'm still, there's a level of integration that's still happening on my end.
Well, how are you relaxing, Philip? I mean, you seem really tense right now.
Well, I'm not. I feel great. the real answer is that I'm not really. I'm not relaxing.
Is the truth, Jesse. We're freelancers. We relax. Yeah. Like we'll relax. Maybe.
Well, I will say a friend of mine loaned me a Nintendo Switch, and that's been pretty rad.
Oh, nice. So,
like every few days, I'll like carve out. I assumed if I got one, I would keep it on the dock and play on the TV because that's how I never owned a handheld. But I actually find that I'm less likely to game if I have to go and sit in front of the couch and like make it an event. If I have to sit down in front of the TV, it's like, I will now play a game for 90 minutes. I tend to not do that. I was like, well, but you know, it's actually leg day. I should do that instead. Or I've got to get this thing in before they wake up in the West Coast, or I've got to, you know.
Oh God, I'm so jealous of you having that three hour window that I no longer have, by the way, since we switched teams. Although you're still.
Oh, right, I know.
But like, Jesse, you got to know, man, like being on the East Coast, and waking up and being like, this is due yesterday, but I still have 3 hours.
Oh, man.
But I do carve out a little bit of time to play Switch, like, you know, in bed or something. Like, right, like when I'm, you know, I was like, oh, I got to go to bed. I'll just play a little bit of this game first. Or, you know, when I'm waiting on something, if I'm like waiting in my car for my medication to come out to the car or whatever, you know, like just any, I'll just carve out a few minutes here and there to game. And that's been really cool. So that's, if I had a real answer for relaxation, it would be that. I try to make a little bit of time for, you've got to read. I mean, any writer has got to make time to read. And so I do take time to do that. I still take time to watch a little bit of a show here and there. My day job is music, as Steve said. So I got to play trumpet. And I hardly ever watch anything that is not while playing my horn. I'll have Netflix on in my office while I practice, which is not the most efficient way to practice, but it's like I'm getting my time in on my horn, keeping my muscles, you know, moving, while also taking in a show, you know, usually, you know, always with subtitles.
Taking in a show. I'm sorry, that was just, are you watching Downton Abbey? Taking in a show sounds very efficient.
Anyway, where was I?
It's Nailed It or Cake Boss, that's what he's watching.
I was watching, I don't even know what Cake Boss is. I watched.
It's in the title, man. Cake Boss.
Well, I gather what it is. You know, the shit that you like.
This is like when my father called me and asked how to apply a dry rub to a piece of meat. I was like, it's in the fucking name.
Anyway, I liked Raised by Wolves. It was really great.
That's what I'm watching actually right now. I have like two episodes left before I'm done with the first season.
It's on my list, so it's good to hear you guys have liked it.
Yeah, it's super engaging. And I like after like watching that first episode, like Steve, you were watching that first episode, you're like, what is happening? Like, what is going on here?
Dude, and then those last two episodes are fucking baller.
Yeah, I'm excited to get to it because I heard there's a lot of crazy stuff that goes down in the last two.
I'm excited for it. Yeah. The lame thing or awesome thing that my boyfriend and I started doing is Saturday morning, we now block out 2 hours to watch cartoons like when we were kids.
But oh, yeah.
Adults, we can curate what they are. So we watched all of the Netflix Voltron, which was, I thought was awesome. And then right now we're watching the uncut version of Dragon Ball, which is shocking in how raw it is.
Oh, yeah. There's some weird, but also very good things in it.
I can't, every issue, Goku just like slaps someone in the crotch and it's astounding to me. Like it's unreal. Oh, it's Philip, we'll talk later. It's wild. But anyway.
I never got into Dragon Ball.
And then we're also watching Evangelion and Young Justice right now. So Evangelion is, in my opinion, the best mech. I mean, in many people's opinion, but like,
yeah.
I'm rewatching it and Mike is watching it for the first time and we're like shocked at how above and beyond it is. That's what's going on over here, along with a lot of wrestling. That's my life.
The longest time my nightly routine was comic books and anime, so I'm with you on a lot of that.
When I got into music, like seriously, like when it became, you know, decided I was going to be a pro, I found that I at some point I stopped listening to music for fun, and it all kind of became like, took on this research quality.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of sucked. I was like, it's not, there's never a moment where I'm just like jamming out to something great. It's usually because I mean, obviously I listen to music and I think it's great, but I am doing it in part because I'm studying it, you know? And I do find that kind of takes on, like, writing has become that way for me too now. Like, even when I read, I'm constantly kind of like dissecting it. And
yeah,
it's not just for fun anymore. I still love to read, and I'm reading some stuff right now that I think is really friggin' awesome. But as I do, I'm studying it and trying to steal it from my own self.
Yeah, no, so. I catch myself out doing that during Kill 'Em. It's like, oh, this is how you do this scene. This is how you do this scene. Even though I'm not writing anything in particular right now, it's just I'm thinking about it.
That's awesome, man.
You're right, though, Philip. Like, I found that, basically any type of narrative thing for me now is like that, and has been, you know? I mean, I enjoy watching things, but it's not as though I don't notice either things that work or don't work. Like, you're always, there's like a second level of taking in when it's what you do. You know, like, if we were professional athletes, I don't think we could just sit down and watch baseball if we were baseball players.
Yeah,
exactly.
So like, and to me, and that sounds, I mean, no one else has ever said that until now, but it, so I thought I was a weird one, and I am, but the same thing's been happening with me. Reading, weirdly, yeah, no, it's true. Like, I have to usually separate, like, things that I'm just reading for pleasure or things that I'm reading, like, for quote-unquote work.
Yeah.
Which works to an extent, but as Philip just said, doesn't really work. Like, you're never really checked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So to answer your question about, like, you know, what I do to relax, like, it's not to say I don't do things that I enjoy that I think are really fun. I do, like, really love the things I'm reading, and like when I'm working out and these other things, like, I mean, time with my son. I guess my real answer is time with my son, like running with him or working out with him or reading to him or playing with him. He's always playing DC. Even when we're doing those other things, we're yeah, really playing. Like, we find these ways to work in play as we're doing whatever the thing is that we're doing. So that would probably be the best answer. I come away from that always feeling really refreshed, but it's, even though I'm not like relaxing in those moments, I'm like, they're very fulfilling to me.
Yeah.
You know, so the only thing that I still have like true ignorance about in my day is video games. And I can just kind of let that wash over me and enjoy it. So I play a little bit of that every couple of days. And that's been cool.
Last question before we wrap up, friend of the show, House of Comics, their podcast, they asked, for you guys, what genre would you guys want to tackle together next? If you could think of one off the, like, if you guys already maybe we've talked about it or something, like, mm-hmm, not fighting now, but what would be a fun thing for Steve and Philip to tackle together again?
Political intrigue.
Let's say we have a political crime book someday that we're gonna do. But putting that aside, Philip, there's got to be a shocking, challenging answer that we have for each other.
Right.
I personally like to see you guys do a Western, because I feel like Steve would have a very interesting concept of what the West is.
I mean, that's actually a good answer, because I don't actually know how you feel about them. But I love that. I mean, everything I do is an aspiration to be Sergio Leone. So I've been writing The Man with No Name / John McClane for 5 years in everything I do. So...
I've got a Western horror book in my back pocket. That might be kind of fun. God, what else? That's a good answer, though. I do like that one.
I mean, personally, I would love to see us do a music book, because you know a shitload about it. And, well, I passively am learning a lot about it. My boyfriend is a professional clarinetist. So I think that could be really interesting. I don't know what the hell it would be about. And that just popped into my head.
Well, that'd be a good setting, something set in like the orchestra world or whatever.
The cutthroat world of competitive tooting.
It would just be whiplash, but that tension, that anger tension has become sexual tension.
So it's going to be about sex with these guys.
With me, no, you bring the actual drama and character. I'm just like, can they fuck? And sometimes he says yes, and sometimes he says no. You know, that's actually the relationship.
That's the book.
Well, thank you guys for spending an hour just talking about all the stuff with me. Where can everybody find both of you guys on Twitter?
On Twitter, I'm at Philip K. Johnson. Philip has two L's. Instagram is my full name with underscores between the names. and full name on Facebook and wherever else, philipkennedyjohnson.com.
There you go. I'm the Steve Orlando on Twitter and on Instagram. And that's where you should go. I have a Facebook, but I mostly kind of keep it for people I know in private life. So yeah. Focus on Twitter and Instagram. I'm there all the time, I promise.
And I'll do all of my rigmarole later pre-recorded, but I just want to say lastly for everybody, it's the holidays. Try to be very kind to one another during this, as long as people are not being. I had Chip on recently, and I said that at the end, and after we stopped recording, he's like, or not, just don't. It's like, yeah, I mean, there's some people don't be kind to, but like, yeah, let's try to be kind this holiday season.
Be safe is way more important, but I agree with be kind in general. But this year, be safe so that you can have, you know, next year.
Yeah, that too. Please be safe, be cautious. Like, think ahead of time.
Agreed.
Yeah. You can find the Comics Matter podcast on Twitter at Comics Matter Pod. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/comicbooksmatter. You can email me at comicbooksmatter@gmail.com. And if you have any questions for guests, any stories about how comic books impacted your life, or want to be a featured guest on the show, you can reach me at all three of those social media platforms. The logo for the show is by my friend Steven, and the theme of the show is done by David Zizetsi, and I got it on freemusicarchive.com. Tell a friend about the show, leave a review, spread the word. I would just love to have more people listening to the show, and remember, be kind to one another.